All right, ladies, buckle up. It's showtime.
The president knows that he has not done a smart thing and it might cost him the election. He did it because of money, and he thinks that there are more black people, there are more people who are Christians, there are more people that want marriage to be right than there are homosexuals, I assure you, in this country. And I think he's going to learn that lesson. I am ashamed that the first black president chose this road, a disgraceful road. So think about what you're doing by giving the president a pass in this arena, in this fight, by saying it's okay because we're black and you're black and we're going to stand you. Mr. President, I'm not going to stand with you. And there are thousands of others across this country that are not going to stand with you with this foolishness.
An audio clip that we played often here, right here on Reese on the Radio. I'm your host, Reese on the Radio, right here, 1 minute after the hour. It is September 25th, 2012. If you remember that audio, that is audio from the Reverend William Owens, who spoke. This was, like, I think this was even days after the 103rd anniversary of the NAACP's. I guess they do this annual gala where people come down there. The President of the United States, Barack Obama, didn't even come down to see the folks and speak to them. Mitt Romney went down there, got booed, for crying out loud. The white man came down to see the black folks and got booed. The black man, who the NAACP credits for getting into the White House, black man sends videotape. Damn. Got completely dissed by the first black president of the United States. Don't even show up to the convention. And Reverend William Owens came out and said, I am not standing with this president. I don't care the fact that he's black. It's ridiculous. You're not going to sell out for the money. We are not going to stand with you. Defiant. Because principles mean more than skin color in this utopia that we call America. And on the phone with us right now, I'm delighted to say, we are on the phone with the offspring of such a brilliant man, Reverend William Owens, by having William Owens Jr. on the phone with us today. Sir, welcome to the show. Welcome to Reese on the Radio.
Thank you so much. It's good to be with you, man. I really celebrate your passion. And it's about Americans realizing what it's time for. And it's time for us to stand on principle and not pigmentation.
Mm-hmm. And you, William Owens Jr., you are with the Marriage Mandate. And you are host of the Worldwide Marriage Thon. Tell the listeners about what that is and what the breakdown of all of this is.
You know, the Marriage Thon is the first of its kind. We want to take the issue of marriage and bring it into the public debate, to bring it into the public discussion, the public square. Mm-hmm. And so this Marriage Thon takes place live 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. online at marriagethon.com. Yours truly, along with a co-host by the name of Pastor Stephen Broughton out of Dallas, Texas. And from 6 to 11 p.m., we'll be discussing the issue and celebrating marriage and why it's important that marriage, traditional marriage, maintain the definition of one man and one woman.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this, and we're going to get directly into, of course, the definition or the redefinition by many people in our media and in our society who are trying to redefine marriage. But let me ask you this. You, as an African-American like myself, you and I will probably agree here, but I'd like your perspective on our agreement. You believe that the one thing that has destroyed the African-American family within the late 20th and the early 21st century has been the lack of marriage in the black community. The reason why I say that is I've talked to plenty of African Americans in the jail system, within neighborhoods like Harlem. I'm from Hollis, Queens. Most African Americans believe that marriage is a white thing. It's a white establishment, a white institution. Do you agree there, or do you believe that there's something else going on? No! I cannot believe we dropped him. Please forgive me, folks. We're going to get him back on the phone. Hold on. We got JC on the line. JC, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, but I still have no internet access.
Oh, okay. No problem. Well, let's see if I can get him back on the phone. We apologize for that, folks. I'm going to dial his number up right now. I think, great. We have his number back here. We seem to have lost him, so I don't know exactly what happened, and I apologize for that, but he looks like he's coming back in now. Here we go. I think we got him now. Here we go. Let's see if we can get him back on the line here. That's a great question I asked him. Are you there? Are you there, William Owens?
Thank you so much for a great day.
Oh, we got his
voice. At the tone, please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press
one. I don't understand how we got cut off. I mean, we at least got him for 15 minutes.
For some reason, the console's been doing that a lot lately.
Really?
Yeah.
How is that? Hold on, let me see.
Console's really been acting up.
Let me see if I can get him again one more time.
But if you would take a few minutes to leave me your name and phone number, I'll be sure to keep your call back at my earliest convenience. Thank you so much, and have a great day.
That really, really sucks. I wonder what happened.
You know, but I agree with you, though.
What's that?
I totally agree with you that there is a lack of black of marriage in the black community. There's a lot of black people that I even talk to, so it's a white thing.
Well, that's my follow-up question, JC, was that I wanted to get his perspective on that, at least to find out what his perspective on that was. For one reason was, if he believes that African-Americans do not or believe that marriage is a white institution, maybe that's why President Obama didn't think that it would get the uproar it did from the black community, or probably still doesn't believe that it would get the uproar, because blacks don't really, you know, they don't really celebrate the idea of marriage, if you get my meaning. It's like black people don't
get that.
Oh, wait, hold on. I think we might get lucky here. I think we may get lucky. I think he's calling on another line. Let's see if this is him on the phone. You are with Reese on the radio. Who's this?
This is William Owens Jr. I apologize for that. My cell went dead, but I found the phone. I started thinking. When you think, things happen. When you don't think, you start doing things that don't make sense, like voting for a person who don't celebrate your principles, but they look like you. It's absurd.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I want to get back to my question. JC, my producer, and I, we're just talking. I finally got him back. I wanted to propose that question to you, is that do you believe that the African-American community, I never ever take my experiences and paint them with a broad stroke and say this is common all over the place. I just seem to have seen this from plenty of people that I've spoken to, that marriage has become sort of the white establishment or the white institution, therefore blacks have shunned it. Do you see that yourself?
I've never heard such a thing. Because marriage, the desire for marriage, is not something that's been given by man. It's an innate desire we have because we're made in the image of God. Marriage is not an institution that man devised. What man in his right mind would devise marrying a woman? That's something God created. So for someone to regulate it to a white establishment or black establishment, I've never heard such an idea.
Right. Well, no. What I'm saying is that when I speak to plenty young black men,
okay,
and I talk about the idea of marriage. As we know, in the African-American community, 70% of households have single-parent households. The idea or the ideology of marriage has sort of waned in that community, you know, as of late. I've seen it in the late, you know, 20th century, you know, 1960s welfare state, you know, women got more money not being married to their partners. So, you know, that destruction of marriage within the black community, that's where it is that I mean, that's where I'm coming from.
My follow-up question to that is,
do you believe that people like President Obama, or do you believe people like the liberal establishment, even the media, have taken advantage of African-Americans sort of shunning the idea of marriage, thinking that they wouldn't, like yourself and like your dad, would start this uprising that would say, we're not going to have a redefinition of marriage because people have been parsing the word marriage, if you get my meaning?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. I still would say this, that I think it's a cultural issue. Marriage is declining in all sectors of society. And yes, while black Americans, you know, account for 70% in that arena, they're only 13% of Americans. And a lot of people are not marrying, not because they don't believe in the concepts of marriage. They're not marrying because our culture is going through a transition. Our culture is being redefined. And that's why people are not marrying. They're not marrying because they don't believe marriage is something that's for one group of people, or it's played out, or it's something in the 1940s. They have been misinformed. And the best way to deal with misinformation is just to accept what a particular group of people say is so. This is why it's important for us to stand up and celebrate marriage and remember and remind our culture and the communities what marriage stands for. Unfortunately, many of those who are leading this country as politicians and preachers, they're leading it the wrong way. And as a result, the next generation is confused. They become misinformed. And what's the best thing to do is say, well, I guess it's played out. That does not change the fact that an apple tree is an apple tree is an apple tree, no matter when it is. No matter what's going on in your life or my life or even the president's life, no amount of justification or philosophical debates can change the fact that an apple tree is an apple tree and marriage is still marriage.
Apple tree is apple tree and marriage is still marriage.
Let me ask you this. Your father, Reverend Owens, said something that I thought was profound. In speaking of this, I want to play the audio real quick. On the president's stance, because I want to get into marriage thon, because that's very important and that's what it is that you're here to talk about. But I want to talk about this and your perspective. I'm sure you agree with it, but I thought this was profound. What your dad said at the press corps not too long ago.
They have chosen something to cater to the homosexual community, to cater to Hollywood, to cater to the big money people. They have chosen that course and just ignored the people that put the president where he is. The president is in the White House because of the civil rights movement, and I was a leader in that movement. And I didn't march 1 inch, 1 foot, 1 yard for a man to marry a man and a woman to marry a woman. So the president has forgotten the price that was paid. Where people died, where they suffered, where they gave their blood to have equal rights in the United States. And for the homosexual community and for the president to bow to the money, as Judas did with Jesus Christ, is a disgrace and we're ashamed.
I thought that last line, that the president took the money as Judas did.
Mm-hmm.
And the association is so accurate because as it was reported just, I think, 90 minutes after he made the announcement on ABC News with Robin Roberts, he pulled in $1 million from the gay community in contributions.
Absolutely. And we haven't seen the end of it because this agenda has been set when he actually ran for president in 2008. He made a commitment to use, and I quote, my White House, and I quote, my administration to see to it that same-sex loving couples will have the same privileges as heterosexual couples. So this agenda has been in the works for a long time. Dianne Feinstein has written the legislation, ROMA, Respective Marriage Act, that's designed to totally repeal DOMA, Defensive Marriage Act. So Obama is following his ideology. He's keeping his commitment to totally revolutionize American's foundation the way we understand it. And he's keeping in step with it. My dad's from old school. You know, he does not mince words. He speaks it the way it is. And I think we need more leaders who can stand up and speak freely without concern of a 501c3 or concern about what people think. And this is why I go back to the point you're making. Because it is accurate as to why the young generation are no longer embracing these values. We see a moral decline that's being put in motion by leadership in politics as well as in the church. I'm amazed. Even as pastors around this country are silent about this. The only ones who are saying anything are those who are embracing the idea of same-sex marriage, whereas those who should be appalled and lifting up their voices throughout this country, across the church pews, pulpits, are not saying anything. They're absolutely quiet. So not only has President Obama taken the money bag, but there are many pastors throughout this country, by their silence, they also have received the silver that Judas himself received.
Yeah, I really, really agree with you here. What strikes me as odd in this coming election, as you're speaking about black pastors in general, is that their principles have completely been washed away in order to support someone just based upon the color of their skin. And in essence, it's sort of like saying anything that would be the antithesis of what would be black leadership in the church, they would stand for it just to keep a black president in office. And I find, like, how could the credibility of the black church stand after something like this?
Well, I think, to be fair, I think it's gone beyond saying, well, let's vote for this black man. Because, I mean, let's face it, people are beginning to realize that Obama's not as black as they thought he was. And they're beginning to realize that. I think what's going on is a deep-seated resentment. There's a deep-seated unforgiveness toward America and toward what has happened to black Americans since the event of slavery. Even after civil rights, even after the march, Martin Luther King Jr., even after all of these different programs that have been initiated, there's not going to ever be any type of law or legislation that satisfies an unforgiving heart. And right now, black Americans are still hurt. They are bitter. And their best way for them to express that resentment is to go the wrong way no matter what it costs. And to their own demise, they have decided to embrace hatred and bitterness and unforgiveness. And as a Christian, no matter what the issue, whether it's your president or whether it's your wife or your husband, if you don't forgive, you're going to be deceived. You're going to believe a lie. And that's why people are rubbing their heads and saying, why can't they see? You know, even white people, like, how come they can't see how they're being used?
Right.
Well, you see, the same way they say black people can't see was the same way those middle-class white people couldn't see, because they saw a chance to prove they were not racist. And that's why they voted for Obama. In fact, some of them are so blind they don't realize it wasn't blacks who put Obama in office. It was the middle-class white Americans, evangelicals, who did not vote that allowed Obama to go in office. So this dynamic is not just from the blacks saying we need to keep a black man in the White House, because that's just the surface reason. The real reason is unforgiveness. In a word, it's unforgiveness. We can break each element of it down, but at the end of the day, there is resentment and there's unforgiveness, and the racism in America is very much alive. It is still alive. There are white people who don't even know they're racist, and there are black people who know they're racist. So these issues are not going to ever go away. It's about people rendering their heart and realizing where their personal hurt lies and asking themselves a question: am I going to be delivered from this? Because if you're not going to be delivered from it, there's a party that is looking for you. And when that party strikes the note in your heart, you're going to run to that party, and you're going to be a part of whatever that party says we're going to be a part of. Because as far as the truth is concerned, you've rejected the truth. So that's why you're a victim. And these parties, they play on victims, both Republicans and Democrats. They play on victims. And this is why black people are still saying we're going to vote for Obama, even though deep down inside they know that that is the wrong reason to vote for it. And many of them are doing it at the expense of their own faith.
We're on the phone, if you're just joining us, with William Owens Jr. You can catch William Owens Jr. and Pastor Stephen Broden. They are the host of the Marriage Mandate and the host of the Worldwide Marriage Thon. Mary, you have a question?
No, I had a statement.
Yes,
you know, to go back to what Mr. Owens was saying, I was talking politics with a young lady at work today, and she said to me, she was like, I'm not voting. You're voting for Romney? I can't believe you're voting for him. I'm not voting for that cracker.
Well, see, it's really sad. It's a tragedy, because many children are eating the sour grapes of their parents. They have been fed a steady diet of hate and resentment, and they feel vindicated only by one reason, and that is fighting against their supposed enemy. And to them, their enemy is white. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter, because that's the only form of relief, and that's the only form of some type of reward they have, is that they said no to the white man. Okay, so, and it's no different than a pimp and a whore relationship. It's wow. That's the way it's ran. And right now the black people are playing the hoe.
You know what? You are preaching to the gods.
You know, they're playing the hoe. They're prostitute. They're allowing their mind. It's worse than physical rape, actually, because they're allowing their minds. They're allowing their resources. They're allowing their children. They're allowing everything, their whole existence, to be treated like a prostitute. This is why it's okay when Obama disrespects them. They don't expect anything but disrespect, because they don't respect themselves. If love doesn't start with yourself, you're not going to even appreciate somebody loving you. Try loving a prostitute. She's going to curse you out. She's looking for somebody to smack her down.
Yeah, I can tell you some stories. Anyway, let's talk about Marriage-thon and what it's the worldwide Marriage-thon.
Yes.
Explain to us what we can expect, when we need to log on. Is it on demand? Can we log on at any particular time? Is it on a specific date and time? Explain to us, one, when we should log on and check this out and what we expect to learn from Marriage-thon.
First of all, you should log on right now and pre-register. MarriageThon.com. Marriage, MARRIAGE, Thon, THON.com. MarriageThon.com. Right when you go there, say, please pre-register. Click that. Give us your first name, your email address, and your zip code, and then you will be pre-registered. For those who just happen to come on that night, all you have to do is go to that site and start watching. Okay? It's going to be a live stream. Which means we'll be inside a radio studio, but you'll be able to see us and hear us, okay? Mm-hmm. And we're going to have guests. We're going to be talking about these issues and more, because we're going to have experts interviewed by us as we discuss the issue. These issues, we're going to be covering media, how the media is playing the conservative, the Christian, the black American. We're going to talk about the psychological implications behind homosexual marriage. We're going to talk about statistics, on how statistics, the fruit of the tree, speaks loudly on why marriage was designed for heterosexuals. When we hear some of the statistics about the homosexual lifestyle, how on an average some of them have had as many as 1,000 partners, we're going to talk about how their mantra is sex before 8, before it's too late, because they can't procreate. So they have to recruit children to this lifestyle. We're going to unveil what is the real agenda behind this push for equal rights in marriage. It's not because they want to love each other. It's because they want to love our children. That's what we're going to uncover. And we're going to also talk about how parents can protect their children from being molested. 25% of young girls before the age of 8 have been molested, 17% for young boys. We're going to have an expert telling us on how to protect our children from being molested. Let me just say this, the reason why this movement is so important. Right now, there are 2% of Americans account for homosexuals in this country. But 1 in 20, all molestations are done by homosexuals. That means 1 in 20 of every homosexual has molested a child. For heterosexuals, that's 1 in 490. So if you can imagine all of a sudden the culture and our society being permitted by a law to exercise same-sex marriage, that's just the beginning. That's just the beginning. So you do the numbers on what this means. This has nothing to do with same-sex loving couples. They don't love. They are some really troubled people. I don't hate them. Let's understand that. My cousin was one of the first to die from AIDS back in the 80s. So I don't, you know, we're all, in one way or another, know someone or know someone who knows someone who has a homosexual somehow in their center of influence. This is not about hating a group of people, but it's also not about making my preference for Rocky Road ice cream to become the law of the land. I need to have my Rocky Road ice cream in my kitchen at my kitchen table. And if a person wants to exercise their preference of sexual relations, let them have it in their house. That's where they have the right, just like I have the right. Okay? So there's a whole plethora of things that we need to understand of what's coming down the pike if we do not stand for traditional and protect traditional marriage. No civilization has endured when you allow this become law of the land. So that's what the Marriage Thon is going to be about. And it's just the beginning. This is just our first one, and then we're going to be doing several tours in the city to talk about this, and then we do it again.
Okay.
Mr. Owens, if I may ask you a question. So how do you contest when homosexuals come out and say that this is not a lifestyle choice, this is how we were born?
Okay, you know, when a person says that, that's called opinion, okay? And there's no scientific proof for them to prove that, okay? So when there's no scientific proof to prove that, the discussion starts with them and it ends with them. That's not the reason. It's just like in the court of law. If they were to take that argument in the court of law, a judge would throw it out because they have no evidence. So it's amazing to me on how a group of people can say, well, you know what, I was born this way. Okay, so you were born this way. Okay, so be born this way in your home. But to try to come out your home and say you deserve the same civil rights as I do as a black man because I didn't choose to be born black. Okay?
Right.
They chose. They made a lifestyle choice, conscience choice, and tried to shroud it under the idea of I was born this way. You still have the proof, the burden of proof of which they cannot produce.
It's so interesting that you say that, and I make this strong argument. William Owens Jr., I make this strong argument that we are talking about sexual preference, and the argument will always be with the homosexual community about sexual preference, and that's where most people have to keep their focus on. Now, I don't know if you want to use this as part of your argument, but every time I speak to homosexuals about this, they are completely shut down. I mean, literally, it's like pulling the plug on the gay community every time I say it. So I want you to hear what it is that I have to say. A child at 3 years old does not understand the word, the term, the nature of sexuality. A three-year-old, a four-year-old, a five-year-old does not know what turns them on sexually. Just like a person who wants to have sex with midgets, a person who likes tall blondes, short redheads, big women, petite women. Those things are identified as you grow older and form your sexual preference as you go on. What it is that you find that appeases you. There is no such definition of being born into a sexual orientation because as a child, the idea of sex and sexuality is the furthest from your mind. It's when you reach puberty. And puberty is based upon, you know, if you're a prepubescent child and you see something that you think is interesting and form a relationship with it. Like if you grow up and you're prepubescent and you like the feel of velvet and you really like this feeling and the first girl you meet and you think is cute is wearing velvet, you fall in love with her. This is all a part of your development, so to speak. Homosexuality is a developed sexuality. It's not something that you're born with. You have to learn about sex, learn about sexuality through your development. So that's when I say this to young to people in the homosexual community, they always argue the same thing. They go, "Well, I guess that makes some sense." Of course it makes sense. You know, I have not dated a black woman seriously since the Reagan administration. That is because I have a preference sexually. But that's not because I was born loving white women. You know what I mean? I had to develop that.
Well, you know, again, all of that is when you talk about developing is still by conscience choice.
True, absolutely.
And what you're saying is very true. And in fact, I will even go as far as to say this, is that when we are born in families, we have certain propensities. We can have a propensity toward certain things. This is why usually when you're born in a family that perhaps has an aggressive men in that family, and many times a lot of men have a history of perhaps going to jail in that family, or a lot of men have a history of liquor, strong propensity toward liquor in that family.
Mm-hmm.
There are certain things that we have different propensities toward that we can't always explain. And this is why this battle is going to be more of religious nature than anything, because there's only one particular group of people that will take a hardline approach to this, and that's going to be the Christian community. Now, I won't say only, because you have a lot of religions across the board who understand and believe and accept the fact, well, you know, we believe marriage should be between one man and one woman. However, the Christian faith, unlike any other Christian, unlike any other faith, clearly defines this as an offense to God. You know, Romans chapter 1 says they burn in their hearts one toward another, and the woman put away the natural use of a man and burned in her heart toward a woman, and the man did likewise. So God gave them over to do those things that are not convenient. So, and the reason why I bring this up is because only inside the Christian faith do we believe redemption is possible for all sin. And sin is the falling short of God's acceptance. That's what sin is. There's no level of sin. Sin is just the missing of the mark in a way that God would accept us on our own regard. Even fornication is sin. Between heterosexual sex is sin. From a Christian perspective. So if homosexual marriage becomes law under civil rights, all of a sudden now, churches who have been permitted by the government to exist through a 501c3, when they begin to preach against homosexual marriage, now they're speaking against the very house that gives them a right to exist.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's an interesting perspective. I never thought of it that way.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you, they know exactly what they're doing. Just like Obama used the black people. Just not like Obama has used the middle-class Americans, Obama is using the gay community. Not just to get money, but more than anything to create another warfare. He's creating class warfare between the haves and the have-nots. He's creating race warfare between the black and the whites and the blacks and the Hispanics by giving amnesty to illegal aliens. Now he's going to create a sex warfare between the homosexuals and the heterosexuals, primarily the Christians. So he is creating warfare. He's creating battle. And it's going to create such an intensity in this country. And, I mean, just take a look at Trayvon Martin. All of a sudden, Obama felt, you know, like this could have been my son.
Right.
Okay, why? He could care less about Trayvon Martin. But why? Because he saw it was expedient for him to achieve his agenda. Obama is a narcissist. There's only one truth, and it's his truth.
Yeah.
He hears himself and persuades himself, and everybody else who don't hear his voice and understand it, to him, they are crazy.
Yeah, exactly.
When you unravel all of this, it's not really about those homosexuals who are dealing with life struggles just like a heterosexual, just like an alcoholic, you know, just like anybody who has trouble in their life. The issue is really not against them. The issue is the agenda that is not being really exposed.
Well, I thank you for all of that. It's funny, you just gave me a very, very different – you gave me a very, very clear perspective. I hadn't thought of that, about the whole – you know, tax exemption, you know, of the church, and now, in essence, that speak would now be considered political speech.
Absolutely.
That's why it took Obama to say it. It's brilliant. It's so brilliant. I am going to log on to the thing. I'm going to do it immediately after the show. Let me ask you finally, look, I'm a huge fan of your dad. And it only took those two quotes that I played today that literally made me fall in love with him as an individual. And I'd never, ever heard of your dad before. I wasn't familiar with him. I went and started looking him up, as I did to look you up. And your words and his words are absolutely profound. I love what it is that you stand for, because it is about principle, and that's what we stand for here on Reason Radio. How can I get to communicate with your dad on this show? Is there a way that I can do that?
Absolutely, man. Let's follow up. Just feel free to give me a call, and we'll definitely make that happen.
Okay. Well, the original 212 number that I have, or should I take down this number that I have here?
It's a 202 number, the one you called me on.
Right. And that's the DC number?
Yes, that's the DC number. Just give me a call, and we'll definitely connect and make that happen for you.
We'd love to do a show with you. send your dad my best. And again, I stand with him. And again, when he made that speech, we talked about it for so long, and it literally been. I mean, I put his audio in my audio bank just so I can have it, and I play. I open my show with his monologue every chance I get.
That's great. So he'll enjoy that. He really will. He's a great guy. He and I talk 3 or 4 times a day, and I'll tell you something. You know, I'm 48 years young. I've been married 27 years, been married more than half of my life. I have 4 children, 20, 22, 24, and 26. And I talk to my dad every day. I can't begin to tell you the importance. And we hadn't even talked about the psychological issues right now of what will be implied if the same-sex marriage rule is passed. And it will not pass. It's impossible for it to pass. It just will not pass. Because if it did, now they're going to have the rights to adopt children. And you talk about a horrific outcome of a generation in 5, 10, 15 years. You will not know this country. You will not recognize this country. Because the psychological needs of a child cannot be fully given except they receive it from a mother, from maternal love, and a father. For that other kind of love that's so essential for healthy children. So, and I only bring that up because I talk to my dad every day. He provides me, even at my age, you know, even at my age, because it's not an age difference. It's a psychological need we have as young people, as adults, for our parents. And a parent is a combination of a male and female counterpart that complements one another. And we're going to be talking about that as well. So I really appreciate you having me on your show, and we're going to have a great discussion. It's coming Friday night. It's the beginning of something great.
Well, I appreciate you coming onto the show. I'm glad that I was able to connect with you. Please tell Sandra that I appreciate her letting me know that you know you were out there. Stephanie, I apologize. Let Stephanie know. Please, thank you so much. I'm probably going to send her an email immediately after the show to tell her thank you. We hope to have you back. We'd love to have you back whenever we can.
Absolutely. Let's keep the lines open, and please send us a clip of this interview. We'd love to share it with others.
Oh, absolutely. We will definitely do that. And listen, man, an absolute pleasure. Can't wait to speak to your dad. So, you know, you have no idea. We're behind you 100%. It's one of the focal points of Free Center Radio. We have a couple of topics that we always talk about. We talk about immigration, and gay marriage is definitely on our top 5 list of discussion. So we will talk about this more, and we will definitely have you back and, of course, talk to your dad. So, again, William Owens Jr., folks, be sure to check out MarriageThon.com. Register today, tomorrow, and be prepared for what I believe is going to be an important conversation about gay marriage legislation in this country, and that's this Friday. Is that correct?
This Friday from 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thanks again for having us.
Yeah, no problem. Friday, we might even jip it, and we call that join in progress. We might even log on and jip a little bit of it. Will people be able to call in and talk to, or will they only be able to observe?
They'll be able to observe as we interview our guest, and you know, we will be inside a radio studio, and we will be giving out a number, so people will be able to call in. Absolutely.
Oh, beautiful. Okay, so make sure that if you want to check it out, it's MarriageThon.com. Register now so you can keep up with the alerts, and of course, 6 to 11 p.m. on Friday, and that's Eastern Standard Time, of course.
Yes.
Yeah, Eastern Standard Time to check that out. William Owens Jr., we appreciate you coming down, coming on the show, and we will definitely have you back, and we appreciate it so much.
You're welcome, sir. Thanks again for having me. Bye-bye.
Thank you. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more of this and your questions. If you want to talk about the interview, the number is 347-308-8701. We'll be right back. It's Reese on the Radio.
Busted. I'm Judy Miller. Let's get started. Mitt Romney released tax returns showing he gave $4 million to charity last year, and liberals are outraged. You know that Romney didn't send all that money straight to Washington. The first presidential debate is next week, and you know what that means. The mainstream media has already declared Obama the winner. Obamacare will raise taxes on 6 million middle-class people. The mainstream media is waiting for Mitt Romney to make a statement on the matter so they can blame the tax hike on him. France has closed 20 Middle East embassies, fearing a backlash against a newspaper that printed a Mohammed cartoon. But France says they're not closing the embassies. They're just pre-surrendering. Hillary Clinton appeared in a Pakistani TV ad apologizing for a YouTube video which had nothing to do with causing Middle East violence. Ironically, Hillary's TV ad did cause Muslim rioting because she wasn't wearing a burqa. President Obama said he learned he can't change Washington from the inside, but that doesn't stop him from always blaming Bush from the inside. Paris Hilton was caught on tape making anti-gay comments, but most of the media are waiting to find out whether she supports Obama before they criticize her. And finally, a French court ordered the publishers of those nude photos of Kate Middleton to hand over all copies. And then Bill Clinton demanded the same thing. Thanks for watching News Lesson, everybody. I'm Jody Miller. Be sure to subscribe to our videos on YouTube. We'll catch you next time.
I love horror movies. My favorite of all time, Evil Dead 2. My second favorite, the Obama administration. I kid the O. But hands down, the year's best horror film is the documentary Andrew Breitbart made shortly before he died. Occupy Unmasked is an in-depth investigation into Occupy Wall Street, revealing the toxic, violent radicalism that festered within. Director Steve Bannon sent reporters into the mess and found what 99% of the mainstream media refused to cover. That it was an orchestrated movement born of the destructive impulses of the academic left, anarchists, and the gullible media who colluded within. The movie also covers similar ideologies of the past, where millions of bodies piled high in the name of the greater good. The ultimate goal of OWS, an overthrow of a free democracy, to be replaced by something else, which can only be fascism. It was freedom only for those on top, which means suffering for those on bottom. Thankfully, what began as a media embrace movement now ends as a joke, but not a funny one. The rapes, assaults, the poisonous ideology, it's a punchline, all right. A punchline worthy of Jonestown. This is the best movie I've seen on radicalism because it's the only one I've ever seen on radicalism. No one in the media would have ever had the guts to do this. It would have cost them jobs and or tenure, for Occupy Unmasked spits in the face of this media academic complex. But sadly, young people are seduced by this garbage every day, which is why parents must get their kids to see this. It might be the only inoculation they really need.
This is Bob. Bob is a normal guy. He has a good job. He works hard to provide for his family. And he tries to keep himself informed on current events. There's just one problem.
I don't think President Obama is doing a very good job.
Bob is a racist. There's nothing worse than having a racist around saying hateful things.
I don't think it's unreasonable for people to have to show ID when they go vote.
Whoa, Bob. Slow down with the bigotry for just a minute. People like Bob are still very upset that there's a black man in the White House. As a result, they oppose President Obama's policies. Not because they're bad policies, but because they just don't like black people. How could anyone oppose such great policies? They're awesome and are working super well.
But how do I talk about my political beliefs without being a racist?
Let's give Bob a few pointers on how not to be racist.
Did you know that under President Obama, more people are on food stamps than ever before?
Bob. That's racist. Just because something is true doesn't mean that it's not bigoted.
But how can something be racist if it's true?
That's a racist question.
We need to secure our southern border to stem the tide of illegal immigration.
Racist! Calling undocumented workers illegal simply because they're here illegally is proof that you hate Mexicans.
My adopted son is Mexican.
Doesn't matter, still racist.
I see.
I like Barack Obama. He's a light-skinned African-American with no Negro dialect.
Now that's racist.
Nope, not so fast there, Bob. It's only racist if it's said by someone who doesn't support President Obama and his policies. Susie is a Democrat, so it's okay if she says it.
That doesn't make any sense.
Sure it does. A liberal can't be racist. It's not possible because liberals support the things that are good for the black community.
So a conservative and a liberal can say exactly the same thing, but only the conservative is racist for saying it.
Now you're getting it, Bobby. For example, when a conservative politician says something that's not directly racist, but is construed that way by liberals, he loses his job, like Majority Leader Trent Lott. But when a Democrat in the same position turns out to be a former Klansman, like Majority Leader Robert Byrd, he's a liberal hero!
It's all starting to make sense now, so I can say all sorts of racist stuff as long as I vote for the right people.
Right! So if Susie says,
I am so proud of myself for voting in the first African-American president in 2008.
Her statement has no racial implications whatsoever. But if someone says,
I voted for Barack Obama last time, but I'm thinking about voting for Mitt Romney this year.
That person is totally racist.
Hold on a second. How can someone who voted for Barack Obama the first time be racist just because they don't vote for him this time? They obviously didn't care about his skin color before.
Sometimes people don't realize that they're racist until later.
How can someone become racist in 4 years?
That's a clown question, bro.
I'm so confused. I don't want to see the country go down the toilet, but I also don't want the people at work to think I'm a racist.
Well, remember, Bob, if the country is ruined, you can always blame it on George W. Bush.
You're right. I'm going to vote for Barack Obama because I'm not a racist.
Way to go, Bobby. Remember, racism in the workplace is never cool.
I'm Barack Obama, and I've never seen this ad. Didn't even know it existed.
Hey, homie.
Look what I got.
Just for you, bro. Fist bump. But the GOP's going to put you all back in chains.
To the top of the hour right here on blogtalkradio.com. Now, you know that I had to bring this up in the last 10 minutes. Monday Night Football. Prove me once again that Reese, that look, it's not like I never know what I'm talking about. I always know what I'm talking about. Can you see the outrage? Do you see the people standing out on the streets in Green Bay, Wisconsin, holding up signs, screaming for the NFL to please return the refs to
their jobs. Can you see them out there screaming and hollering? Oh, hell. You can't have the replacement refs ruin the winning streak of America's team. Oh, that's right, because it's no longer the Dallas Cowboys. It is the Green Bay Packers. The Green Bay Packers lost against the Seattle Seahawks? Now, look, I watched a little bit of the game. I didn't hear any controversy going on during the game, and I missed the last play. But, Lord, do I wish I watched it. And the outrage continues. And people are talking about the integrity of the game. That's all they're talking about, the integrity of the game. We have to make sure that this game keeps its integrity. Well, let me let you in on a little secret, ladies and gentlemen. You asked for it. This is exactly what people have been talking about for years. This is what the argument has been for years. And the strongest argument there is affirmative action. Should anybody be able or qualified to just do any job? Shouldn't you have the best and the brightest do any job? And if this story is so important, if this is so important to the dynamic of football, why doesn't it apply to everything that we do in society? What are you outraged for? We lower the standards of firefighters, police officers, teachers, for crying out loud. We lower the standards for children to get an education because we don't believe in the best and the brightest. We should lower the standards so that everybody gets a shot. Well, guess what, folks? We've got AA, AAA, A division, D division, bakery owners, shop teachers, auto mechanics, broads. They're all taking the job as replacement refs. Now, I want you to understand the standard. Most referees, it takes them 5 years to learn the NFL rulebook. 5 years. An average of 5 years. These people had 4 weeks. These replacement refs had 4 weeks. And look at the carnage. I mean that figuratively, of course, but look at the mayhem. Look at the outrage. And people are going to remember this, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm going to throw it in their faces. You can't just have anybody do a job. You cannot lower the standards. There have to be professionals out there who know what it is that they're doing. I tell you this over and over and over again, that affirmative action doesn't work. It sullies the profession. And here it is being proven every day. Here's an old friend who has been gone for a little while. White Mike! What's up, big guy?
Oh, man. I was listening to Mr. Owens go off about gays, and I tried to get in, but you guys were busy. And
well,
I couldn't disagree more, man. It's a simple question, okay? When you became a pubescent male and you started getting your hormones and you were starting to notice things, right? Is there any way you'd have just said, oh, yeah, I think I like dudes. I'll choose dudes. Absolutely not. The only thing that's going to make you turn to dudes is a life sentence in prison because there's no access to women. Okay?
Wait, Mike. Here I am on a tangent about the NFL, and you want to go back to our interview. That's okay.
Well, here's the thing, dude. This thing with refs, if I would say that they were during a regular season when regular refs were there, they were saying, you know, we have to have a bunch of women and some Down syndrome guys and more Latinos. and they just brought in people to meet a standard, you'd have a point. But right now, you had two options. You can get whatever reps you can who kind of understand the game of football, or you can have no football.
Right. No, I agree. I agree with you. No, no, no.
And as far as I'm concerned, I think that our slavish adherence to sport is reminiscent of the fall of Rome. This is bread and circuses, my friend.
You know what? I agree with you to an extent, because here's what it is that I'm saying to you. I get, by the way, I showed you that video. I 100% agree with you as saying that, look, we'd have no football if we didn't have these replacement refs. What I'm saying is that my argument isn't about the replacement refs. I'm not riffing on the replacement refs. What I'm riffing on, simply here, and I'm going to let you get into the discussion, because we'll talk about it at the top of the hour. We'll talk about William Owens Jr., and I want to hear your perspective on that, because I think it's important here. What I'm saying about the replacement refs is this, is that all of these people in the football market, fans, commentators, news reporters, what I'm hearing from them that makes me laugh is that these are the same people that believe that everybody should get a shot. If you were to ask these same people who are, you know, it's the liberal media. If you were to ask these people the question about whether or not more blacks should be firefighters or more women should be cops, each and every one of them would say, yeah, absolutely. And we would say, well, what if they don't qualify? Well, maybe we need to lower the qualifications. Maybe we need to lower the standards. And guess what? Here it is happening in their profession, and they're outraged. And they'll even make the argument that it's not the same thing. Truth is, it's exactly the same thing. This isn't, and guess what? Remember, when the regular refs were there, what did normal people say when the refs made a bad call? Oh, a monkey could do your job.
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty much.
Yeah, right. That's how they ridiculed the regular refs. Oh, you're the worst. Ed Hockley made that horrible call. In fact, I found out what game it was. It was the Denver Broncos against the Chicago Bears. But they ripped him. They made death threats. Oh, you're an idiot. You know, you're a zebra. They disrespect the refs all day, every day. And here,
yeah, I live in the heart of Florida Gator country.
Oh yeah.
And if you've never had the pleasure of dealing with a Florida Gator fan, they are the absolute worst fans in all of college football as far as when they lose. Because when they lose, it is always because of a bad call by a referee. Always.
Mm-hmm. That's
but
Debo.
When bad calls go in their favor, they say nothing. Like, there was a game a few years ago where, you know who Riley Cooper is?
Hmm?
Okay, Riley Cooper was a white wide receiver in the Tebow era. And he was Tebow's go-to guy. They were like roommates. He was a white guy with speed. But there was a game where they played, I think, Alabama. And Riley Cooper straight up was the offensive pass interference. Like, they saw him shoving off the D-back. Didn't get called. And when I mentioned it to the Gator fans, they're like, oh, well, you know, that's him, that everything gets called. But let a call go against them, and it's, oh, that referee's crazy, he's incompetent, blah, 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 fire him.
Exactly. See, this is where I'm talking about the hypocrisy here. And I make this argument all the time. That's the reason why. And Sally called yesterday, and, he was upset about it as well. But the bottom line is that this, to me, is a clear example of what it is that we're talking about. It's like, look, we need to have the best and the brightest on every job. Because these people who are talking about the integrity of football, well, what about the integrity of the police department? What about the integrity of the fire department? What about the integrity of any job out there where people's lives are at stake?
My old man was a Louisiana State Trooper, and he was a good cop. You know, always aced the sergeant's exam and never made sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't make sergeant because Louisiana had some rules where certain numbers of minorities and women had to get promoted. So that was even if they didn't have the highest score, they had to have a certain amount of blacks and women making sergeant.
Right.
So that's your department.
Yeah, it's to me, it just makes me laugh because –
again, I'm seeing these people do exactly what it is that I expect them to do, and they're making – and as you said, look, this whole thing about football, they're making it more important than it is. It's just a game. Let it go. To the people who are in the business, it's important to them because this is their livelihood, and I understand that. But this has become – I mean, for crying out loud, even O'Reilly just had a segment on it. NBC, ABC, and CBS, they all did a segment on it today. Talking about the refs, and here they're talking about the integrity of the game, talking about how they need to get the professionals out there to play the game, and they're shaking their heads at Brian Williams went so far after he did the report, shook his head on camera at his disgust about this play. But here's the same piece of garbage, Brian Williams, who believes that standards should be lowered in professions that matter.
Well, there's near that website I linked you to, that stuff black people don't like.
Oh, yeah.
Well, a couple of weeks ago, there was a story about military special operations and how certain people in the administrations are complaining that there's not enough diversity in military spec ops, like the top guys, like SEALs and Delta and Rangers and Air Force, Pararescue and Combat Controller. And the SEALs are something like 92% white, and there's two or three black SEALs out of several hundred, and the rest are like Latinos and Asians. And they wonder, you know, can't we get more diversity? But military spec ops is a place where you can't change the standards.
Absolutely. You're either
a SEAL or you're not a SEAL. And for some reason, maybe it's the can't swim thing, who knows, but brothers are not real, you know, and brothers just don't want to do this stuff. I mean, black dudes don't want to jump out of airplanes.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
They
don't want to
don't.
Do the job. What are you going to do? Force them to take the position?
And, you know, look, man, I was in the military, okay, and I will tell you that me, a dental assistant from a small town in Louisiana, I outshot 95% of my qualifying class. And the other guys who beat me were all white dudes. You know? There was maybe the brothers are holding their rifle sideways, made it hard to shoot, who knows? If they put sights on the side of the rifle, they might do better.
All right, let's go to the top of the hour so I can get your opinion on my conversation with William Owens Jr. when we return. Stick around, folks, at 3Sunday Radio.
Can be devastating to your ears.
I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com.
The First Amendment is not absolute. No amendment is absolute. Can't scream fire falsely in a crowded theater. We have libel laws. We have anti-pornography laws. All of those are limits on the First Amendment. Well, what could be more important than the wellspring of our democracy? And certain limits on First Amendments that, if left unfettered, destroy the equality in our democracy, of course would be allowed by the Constitution. And the new theorists on the Supreme Court who don't believe that, I'm not sure where their motivation comes from, but they're just so wrong.
Top of the hour, 4 minutes after the hour, right here on Reese on the Radio, September the 25th, 2012. We just had on the air at the top of the hour William Owens Jr., the son of Reverend William Owens, talking about the Marriage-thon, which will be this Friday at 6 p.m. till 11. You can log on to marriagethon.com to watch a live broadcast of that, but of course, make sure that you tune into Reese on the Radio as well. We'll probably jip part of it to listen to part of the conversation. White Mike is on the phone with us, and he wants to have this discussion about where he disagrees with William Owens Jr. And where do you disagree here, White Mike?
Well, and you know, I like women. Okay. I happen to like a particular type of woman. I like not uncommon. I like really attractive women who are tan, have low body fat, maybe a couple of tattoos, and big fake boobs. But the women I sleep with aren't always like that.
Okay.
But they're always women. Okay.
Right.
I mean, with the exception of Precious. Okay. There's not a lot of women that I wouldn't sleep with if the opportunity presented itself. I mean, I've been with some ugly women, short women. I'm the oldest dwarf. Okay, so as long as it has a vagina, I'm good. But
right.
Vagina is key. I'm not going to sleep with guys. There's
right.
nothing. Well, I'll take that back. If I had a shot to nail Brad Pitt, I would nail Brad Pitt just for the story. Okay. Just
all
to
right.
say I nailed Brad Pitt. But I'm not going to go out and chase dudes. I have a cousin who's gay. My cousin Jake is really gay. Jake has been gay since he was a little boy. Jake's never been into girls. He always liked guys. I have friends who are identical twins. And they couldn't be more different as people. One is a long-haired hippie. And one looks like Robert Downey Jr. But they're both gay. There's no benefit to choosing gay. I mean, if anybody could tell me the benefit to choosing being gay, I'd like to hear it. I mean, what, you can be a pariah, lose your family, have society hate you, be an outcast? Why would you choose? I mean, it would be easier to be straight.
Well, again, I bring back the argument. I understand that you're saying that there is a public, there's a public out there, a public admonishment of those who are gay. In other words, you're going to be exiled in some degree. You're going to be ridiculed. I understand that completely. So no one chooses. But here's my point: is that when it comes to your body and your sexuality, right? You're turned on by what you're turned on by. I'm not making any dispute about whether or not a person is attracted to physically someone of the same sex. I'm not making an argument there. What I'm making an argument about is the claims of being born a certain way. Because you cannot be born into a sexuality. As a child,
well,
you know nothing of it.
Well,
you don't know.
Well, yeah, but by that I mean, when I was like in third grade, I liked girls. You know,
okay.
I kissed a girl in the third grade. I was always into girls. My little gay cousin, when he was 8 years old, was trying to kiss on little boys. He
okay,
didn't know what sex was, but he knew innately what he wanted to kiss on.
Right, okay, so you're saying he was in the third grade. In the third grade, he's 8 years old.
Yeah.
Okay, so but that's not born. That's 8 years after his birth.
But there's no scientific, I mean, I can't argue whether you're born gay or you choose to be gay, because I don't know. Nobody knows, because there's no scientific evidence that proves that people are born that way.
And that's my argument against these people within the gay community who keep using that whole mantra that they're born a certain way.
Well, yeah, but if the defining factor is, do you want to hump somebody when you're 2 years old, then there's no argument that nobody wants to hump anybody when you're 2 years old. But once you develop a desire to hump somebody, if all you ever wanted to hump from the time you wanted to hump somebody is other dudes – you didn't choose to be a dude. You're just
right.
a dude.
But that's developmental. Wouldn't you agree that that's developmental?
No, it's innate. I mean, you didn't developmentally decide to be with women. It wasn't like you came to a junction in your life and you're like, is it going to be, you know, tacos or hot dogs?
Well, okay. So you, okay. All right. Let me put it to you this way. Okay. That to me almost
tacos
sounds.
Tacos or hot dogs.
Almost seems completely far off the map. Here's what I'm saying. If you developed your homosexuality at age 1 month, how would you know? You can't know. 2 months, you can't know. A year old, you can't know. You know, there's no way that you could know. The body mind does not develop in that way.
Well, all I can say is from the time my little cousin was walking around, everybody knew this kid was gay because he had gay mannerisms. He acted like a gay guy. He didn't know what he was doing, but we knew he was queer.
What? But he was, what if he was mimicking his mother because he spent a lot of time with her and saw her mannerisms?
His father raised him for the most part. His mom was some, like, inattentive parent. And my uncle is a deer-hunting hippie body man who went to church, the furthest thing from gay. He had no gay people in his life.
Is this thing working?
Yeah, you're on, JC.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay, I'm sorry.
He was surrounded by stereotypical masculine Cajun men. And he ended up being as gay as anybody I've ever met in my life. He is the gayest human being ever to draw breath.
And you know why I think they say that? I think they, because a lot of them I've spoken to, and I'll tell you the same thing, it's because that's the way that they feel as far back as that they can remember and feeling that way in very early childhood.
Yeah, I believe that most of this is a part of childhood development. Now, Mike, I hate this whole term of this whole idea of cross-examining you when it talks about your cousin, but I have to because I'm trying to investigate exactly your point. You're saying that when he first started to walk around, people knew right off the bat that he was gay. My question to you is when you say when he started walking around and people started to identify that he was gay or he might be into boys, what age was that? 3?
Yeah, dude, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, he looked like a stereotypical queen. He was as queeny as you could get at 3.
Listen, I have a friend. I have a friend, and she's got a son. And he's not even 3 years old right now. And he plays with dolls. And he's really, really feminine. But he says that he's their daddy. But, I mean, in the way that he can walk, talk, carries and conducts himself, the kid has more sugar in his tank than a ghetto glass of Kool-Aid.
I mean, there's no reason that anybody would choose it. And there are people that fight their whole lives not to be it.
How many times have you
seen guys who get married and have children and then they come leaping out of the closet in their 40s because
Not disputing the fact that there is a lot of people out there that would discourage someone coming out before making it, you know, a difficult decision for them to be outwardly about their sexuality. I'm not disputing that no one chooses to be. But what I'm saying to you is that the definition of born is that if a 3-year-old decides that they have feminine tendencies and embarks on those feminine tendencies by playing with dolls or walking around with a switch or being feminine, it still does not in any way whatsoever concretely to me prove that this person was born.
Well, dude, unless a 6-year-old is asking for an 8-inch-long pacifier to suckle on, you're never going to definitively know that it's provable gay.
Wait a minute.
But
and look at it like this. And also, look at it like this. But when you're born, you're basically learning from your parents and their environment. And I don't think that any personal boy would be feminine simply because his mom is feminine, or be act masculine simply because his dad is masculine. You could see it. At very early ages, how a kid acts and their mannerisms. That yeah, there's something wrong here. So as far as thinking that they're born with it, I think it could be something in the genes.
It would have, the only way to be born with it would be that it would have to be of their genetic makeup. There
right.
would have to be something scientifically physiology and scientifically that there would have to be proof for that. So maybe that's
yet to find.
And again, this is something that geneticists geneticists have been arguing this for the longest. I mean, I brought this up a couple of weeks ago when I asked the question about, you know, this Boston Globe article that I read back in 2008, where the geneticists believed that they found the genome or some sort of a placement in the brain where they identified how women. Let me break it down to like this. I want to bring Dennis, Sally, and Edward in on this in a second. But what they did was that they broke down the brain of a lesbian woman and a gay male, and they found how the brain reacted to images of attractive men and women. So they gave the lesbian an attractive woman, gave the gay man an attractive male. And the synapse, or whatever it was, that reacted in the brain was the same synapse that reacted for a heterosexual woman in the gay man and for a guy in the lesbian woman. So that portion of the brain reacted. Let's get the rest of the guys in here because I know they want to chime in. Dennis, Sally in Massachusetts and Edward in Connecticut. Let's go with Dennis first. Dennis, do you believe in this whole idea?
I'm not touching that. I call for something else.
Okay, well, then hold on. Sally, did you have a question or a statement about this?
Yeah, I do. So let me just say I kind of take Mike's position on this, but I want to ask it in a different way. Hmm. What do you think, two questions, what do you think makes a person left-handed or right-handed?
That's an interesting thing because I just experienced that back in November with my nephew.
You recall years ago, if you were left-handed, I'm left-handed, if you were left-handed years ago and you're Catholic, they used to try to break you of it.
Oh, absolutely.
Are you aware of that?
Okay,
yeah,
I'm going to chime in here for a second, Sal. I'm left-handed. My mother is left-handed. I know almost everything you can know about the Southpaw. You know, I'm in tune with other Southpaws. I don't know what it is. It's just something. But long time ago, they didn't study the right side of the brain. They only studied the left side of the brain. And that's why there was all of that, you know, in Catholic school. My mother went to Catholic school. They smacked her hand with the ruler. No, you need to write right-handed. They screwed up a lot of left-handed people back in those days because they screwed the synapses up in their brains actually by doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But don't you think, I mean, if you go with Reese's argument, don't you think that, you know, they weren't really born left-handed? So you get where I'm going with this?
Oh, no, okay. No, hold on. No. Remember, that is all developmental. As I was going to say, just before Mary chimed in, I dealt with this recently. In November, my nephew Liam, which you guys all saw the video on Facebook, my little nephew, I remember when I realized, the moment that I realized that he was left-handed. And it was before he was 2 years old, and he kept grabbing the door handle, because he loves grabbing the pots and pans, as many children do. They always go into the kitchen. They like to make the noise with the pots and pans. So I literally, like, watched him for a little while when he went to go open up the cabinet or went to go grab for things to go make noise or create some mischief. He was opening everything and grabbing everything with his left hand. And I looked at my sister and I said, he's left-handed. And she goes, how do you know that? I said, watch it. So I took the pots and pans and I put them back in, took them from him, put them back in. And sure enough, he walked right up to the door, opened up the door with his left hand, reached in with his left hand. Even when it was uncomfortable for him to reach for a certain item, he didn't use his right hand for leverage in order to grab it. Like when it was easier for him to grab the item with his right hand because it was right in front of him, he still used his left hand. That's where he was comfortable. It's a development. If you find that...
No, it's not a development. He's just left-handed. Being left-handed is like, say, it's no more development than being blue-eyed.
No.
Agreed.
It's just how you are, because you can't make somebody not be left-handed. He didn't make that to be left-handed. He's just left-handed.
But wait, don't you think that if someone is comfortable with the way their body moves in a left-handed way, you're saying that that's all brain function, so therefore...
It is.
Hold on.
Yeah, dude, I can't do squat with my left hand, and I've tried. I can't throw a ball with my left hand. My right hand, I throw pretty good. Left-handed, I'm like a Down syndrome girl.
And there's scientific evidence that being left-handed and right-handed is not something developmental. There is scientific physiological evidence.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm saying. There are certain areas of the brain that cause us to be who we are. And I do not believe – I used to be on Reese's way of thinking, but I think it was JC said it, and I have a very similar situation. We have some friends who have a very young child, a boy who wants to play with girl dolls. He doesn't want to look at a superhero doll. He's got to have a little princess doll. This is not something that he learned from anybody. He's been doing that since he was two.
It's not always. I mean, I know some effeminate street guys. I know guys that are effeminate hairstylists and are absolute boon hounds.
Let's get Edward. Edward, I need somebody to agree with me here. Come on.
He's not going to agree with me.
Edward,
I'm sorry, Reese. Sorry, I said sorry, but I have to disagree with you also.
I can't believe this.
I think I've told you before, my wife and I have been doing foster care for many years now. And sometimes these kids just come straight out of the box, you know, acting in a very, you know, what we call stereotypical, you know, mannerisms. You know, and a lot of these kids that do come out that way are abused, and, you know, that's how come they end up in foster care. You know, because they come out acting just the way they act, and, you know, the parents don't like it. You know, they end up abusing them, and they end up in foster care. So, you know, just like that guy, you know, the guy who was on earlier, he said something very quick that I think you missed. He said, you know that marriage had to come from God, because what man would create marriage? What man would create marriage, you know, to marry a woman? Well, what guy would, you know, want to... He's, you know, gay.
I understand. See, I have to get William Owens Jr. back in there because this is obviously sparked.
You know something else, dude. I really wanted to chime in when he was on too. When he had stated with regards to molestations that most are done by homosexuals, and I'm thinking, wait a minute. As far as I know, in the statistics that I've seen in the past. And I don't have my computer to look at them. Most are done by family members.
You look at a guy like Sandusky. I mean, Sandusky probably identified himself as a straight man. He didn't look at boys as being gay. He was just into the whole childlike aspect of them. Now, I'm not going to say there aren't some chicken hawks out there. But when you look at a prepubescent child, that's not a male or a female. That has no postpubescent mature sexual characteristics. That's just a child. And there's plenty of pedophiles that are boys and girls.
And I hate to keep bringing it up, but I think I told you guys before, and I try to get Reese to watch it because it amazes me, especially coming out of the Middle East, the Bacchabasi, which is a problem out in not Saudi Arabia, but
you're saying the Arab world.
No, not the Arab world, but where are we now in that first war?
All
Afghanistan.
Right.
I mean, it's really huge in Afghanistan where they make anywhere from 9 to 13 or 15-year-old boys dance around and party in women's clothing. Then the whole group of them have their way.
Yeah,
Yeah, that's the Dancing Boys of Afghanistan. I have a friend who served over there, and he said that the guys have a saying. They say that women are for children and boys are for fun.
Wow.
Very huge to a rich affluent man over there, too.
That's just sick. Anyway, so, okay, so you guys are in consensus here. If I read you all correctly, you're in consensus here that this is a born this way issue.
Okay. I believe that that is the consensus. However, I do believe that there are gay people that do choose to be that way. I don't think that every single person out there, because I know people personally that have made choices. So what do you all think about people that are bisexual? If you like men and you like women, are you really just screwed up?
I think they're just greedy. They're just greedy.
Only
a gay person would know that. That's what gay people call bisexuals.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah, they're greedy. They need to pick a hole and stick with it.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
You watch it because that's my damn email address.
I mean, I have a friend who's bisexual, but I think his dalliances with chicks are just to convince himself that he's not fully gay. But
exactly.
He always ends up with dudes.
Okay, so what about bisexual women?
Oh, they're just God's gift.
Yeah.
Oh, you see?
I agree with you.
They're the greatest. I think that all women at their core are kind of bisexual, because it's not as big a stretch for a woman to be with a woman as for a man to be with a man.
Right.
And women are soft and pretty, and they smell good, and they're delicate. And men are just kind of friggin' gross. You know, if you're going to be with a guy, that's got to be some innate stuff, unless it's Brad Pitt.
Look at you in the Brad Pitt.
I'd been Justin Bieber over for sure, but he's half the girl anyway.
Ow! I'm just sickened by you. Goodness gracious!
There's no shame in my game, player.
I definitely hear that. That's just awful.
Sounds like your game is a little bit of greedy.
Keep my email out of it.
Pretty now, come on.
Before we move off this topic, I want to ask Reese a question about this. Let me ask you something. If you're a kid and there's a 16-year-old boy who's dated women his whole life, but he only does so because he wants to appear straight, so he's never actually dated a man or anything like that. Is he gay or is he straight in your eyes?
Hmm.
Because my contention is society's perception is that he's straight when in effect he's really gay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What makes you gay? Is it the act or is it your natural inclination?
I believe it's the inclination. I agree with Edward there. I believe it's the inclination, and here's what I mean by this is that you know, I had a friend a couple of years ago who used to always say, everyone in life, if you're a guy, you've had a gay experience. He wouldn't refuse to suggest that for women, because one, he wasn't a woman and he would not know. But he believes as a guy, he believes that every man has experienced a gay experience. So I tried to understand.
You ever see Prince when he was young?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Prince was pretty.
And I said to him,
I said,
what do you consider like a gay experience? And he ran down a gamut of things, like what would be considered a gay experience, you know, guys in a circle jerk, you know, guys running around naked wrestling, crap like that, you know, stupid like punching a guy in the nuts or grabbing someone's, you know, like you be in a fight and grabbing each other's balls to hurt each other. He was talking about stuff like that. He was saying that everyone's had sort of a gay experience. And what he suggested to me was that whenever there was a situation where another guy touched you physically on your genitalia, for whatever reason, it's a gay experience.
Yeah, but wait.
Well, how about...
Wait a minute. You went from You went from wrestling naked.
Guys do that. Guys do that.
You went from wrestling naked to, you know, being in the fight, kind of maybe losing the fight and grabbing the other guy's nuts. Come on now.
How about two muscular old up guys in a wrestling ring?
Guys,
like the Ultimate Warrior and Lex Luger. No. That's pretty
hey,
gay,
watch,
man.
Watch yourself, mate.
That's pretty gay.
No, no.
Two dudes in neon colored spandex rolling around
Mike,
in a ring together. Pretty gay, bro.
Mike. Watch yourself. Listen, we all have, because I'm sure that every man on his phone at one time or another, especially a young man and teens, we've all tucked and looked at ourselves in the mirror as though we had a coochie.
Wait. Well, oh, I've never
done that. What about trannies? You ever seen a really hot tranny?
Yeah. Puerto Ricans make the best.
Hold on, guys.
I saw a hot tranny stripper, dude, and trust me, you know, I might have gone there.
Hold on, Mary. What
Mike,
you
oh, my God, you're killing me tonight. I can't believe it.
Here's the thing. If she was a girl, I'd have tried to go in the back door anyway. So what's the
difference? That's what he's
Why?
You're saying
I think
that
Mike's doing some shock routine here. I'm not sure how much of this is sincere.
Well, don't worry. We'll get off the subject in a second.
How much of this is comedy and how much of this is confession?
Hey, I am open, bro. Seriously, I've seen some hot, met a hot tranny porn star at a porn convention. And I was like, yeah, shit, okay. Sure. If the opportunity presented itself, yeah, why not?
So put your boots on, my man. That comment about you being at the porn fest or whatever. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, I've been to a porn convention.
No, that's it. I have to put him on hold. I'm going to take a break.
What is that new job doing to you, Mike?
I don't know.
What are you doing over there?
I think it's only right that we play the song that Mikey would play for Justin Bieber. If he would ever... Yeah, we'll take a break. We'll be right back. It's Reese on the radio.
Tired of government picking favorites in business? Is red tape making it impossible for you to earn a living? When private businesses collude with the government to exclude competition, you get cronyism. How do you get rid of it? You can try passing laws, but that only covers up the problem. There's a better solution.
Hi, Willie Bays here with another fantastic product, Crony Clean, the spray that breaks down cronyism by breaking down government bureaucracy. Normal products attack the side effects of cronyism by passing more laws and business regulations. But Crony Clean is different. It targets the root cause of cronyism, too much government. Using proven political science, Crony Clean eliminates the government influence on business, giving everyone the right to make a living. No more concentrated benefits, no more dispersed costs. America! Why waste your time and money fighting an uphill battle against special interest groups? With Crony Clean, you have the power to fight. Crony Clean can be applied to restore economic liberty, property rights, the First Amendment, and much more. Order now and receive Crony Clean for the unbelievable price of nothing. Just pay fewer taxes. But wait, there's more. Call in the next 20 minutes and you'll receive a free gift, the Dollar Deflator. It forms a strong barrier to protect your dollar savings from inflation. Keep America free by keeping the government out of businesses. Order now.
Offer not available in Washington, D.C. and surrounding areas. Side effects may include more economic freedom, jobs, less corruption, and improved quality of life. If you're a politician or lobbyist, please consult your doctor before using Crony Clean. Order today.
for you. 34 minutes after the hour right here on Reese on the Radio, September the 25th, 2012. I want to make sure I, again, thank our guest today on the show, William Owens Jr. Why does that seem like such a tongue twister to me? William Owens Jr., the son of Reverend William Owens, that I will definitely connect with to have him on the show. Moving right along, because this gay conversation is killing me right now. It's just way all over the place. Justin Bieber's, you know.
You probably suffer from a little bit of dyslexia, and that's why it's hard for you to say that.
William
because
Owens?
Because you probably want to say Owen Williams.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, you're probably right.
Because it flows. I just, you know.
It flows better.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're probably right. Anyway, a couple of audio sound bites I want to play today, which I found pretty interesting. This was today, Andrea Mitchell ripping on President Obama about showing up on The View and not meeting with foreign dignitaries. Now, there's a reason why I want to play this, okay? There's a reason why I want to play this. Because the UN General Assembly is going on for a couple of days in New York. And I want to harken back to a little-known television ad that happened back in 2008. And see if anybody thinks that these two, in some way, make sense. Okay, here's Andrea Mitchell. Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC and NBC News. This is her talking about President Obama not meeting with foreign dignitaries and, of course, leaders, world leaders.
I was meeting with the Egyptian president of the Muslim Brotherhood is fraught with political significance. There are a lot of other difficulties, but that's sort of one of the things you have to do when you're the president of the United States. And I think he really did make it worse by sitting down with The View. I love The View. I love the show. We're all, you know, friends. I'm a big fan. But this was not the moment to sit down with The View. That's done by Mitt Romney, by Barack Obama, by everyone else. They do these kinds of interviews, but not this day and at this time.
Not this day and not this time. CNN, they even went so far. They went so far as to bash the president for the same thing when they talked about him going on a view. But they went so far as to call it something a bit worse.
It was interesting you showed a clip of the Secretary of State there, Hillary Clinton, because she has been meeting with all kinds of world leaders while President Obama has been meeting with the ladies from The View.
That's right. I mean, Hillary Clinton could not have written this moment better herself. I mean, it looked a little foolish for the president to be talking about some of the issues on The View with the girls on the couch while the secretary was meeting with all of these leaders about all of these important issues. Yesterday she met with the leaders of Libya, Egypt, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and President Obama is trashing Mitt Romney.
Now, I want you to hear what it is that she said again about Hillary Clinton. This is very important, what she says about Hillary.
Has been meeting with the ladies from The View.
That's right. I mean, Hillary Clinton could not have written this moment better herself. I mean,
Hillary Clinton could not have written this moment better herself. What is she talking about? Well, that's because she's talking about this little ditty that I dug up from the archives of 2008. And I love, love this piece.
It's 3 a.m. and your children are safe and asleep. But there's a phone in the White House and it's ringing. Something's happening in the world. Your vote will decide who answers that call. Whether it's someone who already knows the world's leaders, knows the military, someone tested and ready to lead in a dangerous world. It's 3 a.m. and your children are safe and asleep. Who do you want answering the phone?
I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message.
It's 3 a.m. Who do you want answering that call in the White House? And you hear that reporter at CNN say, Hillary Clinton couldn't have written it better herself. Here is the General Assembly with all of the world's leaders. This moron is talking to The View, and who's sitting around talking to the world leaders while the embassies and the world is burning in the Middle East? But Hillary Clinton. And who predicted it back in 2008?
It's 3 a.m.
Who do you want sitting there?
I don't want her sitting there either.
I don't either. But for crying out loud, tell me that's not at least a little bit profound. Guys, you got the story couldn't have been written better.
Look, man, this is President Obama touched the third rail of American politics. And that's he did not show the appropriate amount of slavish devotion to the nation of Israel. That's it. And Andrea Mitchell is, I hate to use the word Zionist because Zionist gets thrown out by a lot of nasty people, but Zionism basically teaches that the Israelis are the top dogs in that region and what they say goes.
Right.
This is the Jews turning their back on President Obama. I think
really?
They're pretty much considering that Mitt Romney's their guy right now, and they're going to throw their support behind him, and then Hillary's their girl in 2016. Obama screwed up.
Hmm. How about you, Sally? What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with him. I think this is I think this the last few months of this administration may have changed the election, and that's one of the big issues, along with this Libya issue. They just played they couldn't have played the hand any worse on both counts. Regardless of how you feel about Israel, they just didn't play the hand well in an election year. And I think, you know, if Romney doesn't win now, then no Republican's going to win going forward. But they messed up big time, I believe.
Oh, yeah, forget about it. The liberals have won automatically. But the point I'm trying to make here in all of this and why I laughed so hard when I thought about it as soon as I'm listening to all these people ripping them. When the CNN reporter said that thing about how foolish it was and Hillary Clinton couldn't have written it better, truth of the matter is that she's absolutely right. Hillary Clinton was telling everybody 4 years ago, this is not the guy you want calling up world or dealing with world affairs at 3 a.m. in the morning.
And now I don't think she has a leg to stand on either because as Secretary of State, she's kind of screwed up with the Libya thing too.
Agree.
Obama has made
not
it clear that he I don't care how he parses it. He went on Letterman and hung out with Jay-Z and Beyonce and went on The View, and he's yet to meet with Netanyahu. Whether you like Netanyahu or not, whether Netanyahu kind of punked him, which he kind of did punk him, is not the point. If Israel is supposed to be our ally, and that, in my opinion, that's not exactly the correct term to use with these people, but if they're supposed to be your ally in the region, you should meet with the guy, whether he's an asshole or not.
Well, I agree with you there, but here's where my – I have a bigger problem. Forget about the Netanyahu, and I'm appalled at the idea that he didn't meet with him, but here's where I've got a bigger problem. Not only was the consulate attacked in Libya, but our U.S. ambassador died there. If there's anybody you need to have a conversation with, is the president of Libya.
Yeah, and nothing.
I'm paramount at this point because you're talking about how his people didn't protect one of our own in their country. And even if it's to rake that guy over the coals, you're sitting up here telling everybody we will not stand for this. You know, you've got to protect our embassies. Forget about Morsi, because what happened in Egypt, none of our U.S. citizens died in Egypt. You deal with the president of the country where one of ours died, where four of ours died. And that's the guy you meet with and say, hey, what the F is the deal?
More than four, there was five. What about the guy that they crucified?
Well, that was in Yemen.
Oh.
And that was a spy.
But the bottom line is, how do you see with him?
He's incompetent, man. I mean, there's no way to put it. Either he's incompetent or he doesn't give a shit or he has an agenda. And none of those are very comforting concepts.
Okay, let me throw out a scenario here. So I believe the reason he did not meet him this last go-around when Netanyahu called for that meeting and said, I really need to speak with you, we're running out of time. The reason I think Obama didn't meet with him is that I believe our government already knows the window in which Israel is going to strike. And we were told by Israel what that window was. And Obama knew that if he met Netanyahu too close to a strike, it would appear the United States was acting in coordination with Israel, regardless of what was stated.
Israel.
So I think he pushed back.
Sally, you touched it. Sally, you have touched it right, literally. Sally, you hit it right on the head. Because the bottom line is that there are two, and there are two scenarios there. Not only would the rest of the world believe that the president was in coordination in that secret conversation or whatever it was, but also what Netanyahu wanted to get from the president of the United States was, listen, we need a red line. You're not giving it to us. You keep telling us to wait. It would have pressured the president of the United States. The president would have, of course, had to have pushed back and say, look, I need you to wait longer. I need you to wait longer. Netanyahu would have taken one of two positions. F you, we're doing this, or we're going to delay on your watch. But he knew Netanyahu was not going to take no for an answer. Listen, we're going to strike. You with this or against this?
But if they strike, and the way I think they're going to strike is they're going to strike with airplanes because they need to directly target these sites. If you look at a map of the region, for Israel to get to Iraq, they either have to fly over Jordan. I don't think that's going to go. The king of Jordan ain't going to let that happen. They got to fly over Syria, and that's not going to happen. Or they have to fly over Iraq. So if they fly over Iraq, and we basically still run Iraq, it's going to look like we were complicit anyway.
This puts them in a very, very precarious situation for one, for that whole reason, is that in essence, with everything that's happening within that region, with Egypt, with Libya, you know, with of course what's happening in Syria, all of that, everything that's flyover country for them to go to Iran is surrounded by people who essentially want to burn freaking Israel to the ground anyway. So they've got no allies in the region, no matter where you look. Go ahead, Dennis. What do you want to say? I apologize.
What you are missing is what the Arabs say publicly and what they say privately are two different things.
Mm-hmm.
Saudi Arabia hates Israel publicly, but hates Iran even more.
Sure.
The enemy of my enemy is my friend. They will allow Israel to overfly.
Well, probably because of the relationship.
They still have to go over Jordan to get there.
No,
that's right.
No, they don't. They share a border by Aqaba with Saudi Arabia, southern Israel. They share a common border with Saudi Arabia.
But the House of Saud are already doing their damnedest to not have their people freak out and riot. I mean, the Saudis.
Oh, by the way, Reese, I'm surprised
they increase payments to their people to try to keep them at peace. If they're seen as being complicit with the Zionist enemy and attacking fellow Muslims,
mm-hmm.
that country's not going to stand.
If they're seen, things are done sub rosa. But Reese, how come you're wrong tonight? I was told you were Jewish, and it's Yom Kippur.
Oh, don't even start with that. Not going to take the night off for my show for Yom Kippur. Never going to happen.
Well, I don't know. Anyway, I got a little change of pace for you. Back with some drug stories here in the Commonwealth. You remember the chemist?
Yes.
The drug lad. Well, she said she had a master's degree, and UMass said, uh-uh. She lied about her qualifications.
Are you kidding me?
And another story in the Herald said the accused rogue chemist in the center of the state's drug lab scandal was eyeballing drug samples instead of testing and weighing them, and even mixed samples with drugs from a stockpile of evidence from the lab, claims a lawyer of one convicted drug dealer whose sentence yesterday was put on hold in the wake of the widening crisis.
What a switch. Look, I thought, and Sal, you can help me out here. I thought that this place was college country. What is going on with these people in Massachusetts with these phony resumes?
Lying author is this phony, and she goes to Harvard. What the hell more do you want?
It's a mecca of corruption here.
It is.
Just real quick on this Israel thing. It's really irrelevant where they fly, how they fly. Israel doesn't have ordnance, non-nuclear, that can do enough damage to take out all of these facilities. They know it. And so,
and because Obama has dilly-dally, don't you think Iran has not bomb-proofed their stockpile? if only the United States could drop some ordinance that would go through it.
Let me ask this. Here's a very important question. Look, the bottom line is that if there's one thing about Israel that we're going to realize in the coming days, if not the coming weeks, about this is that Israel decides to strike, if indeed in October, be it even November, if they decide that they're going to strike, the bottom line is that they're going to deal with a lot of opposition, and more so that they're going to have to protect their borders in the Gaza Strip against Palestinians who you know are going to use that as an opportunity to strike Israel on all fronts, because they're going to take that as an act of war in Palestine. That's why more people are sitting around going whether or not Benjamin Netanyahu is just blowing smoke. But that being said, if there's one thing that I know about Israelis on this front, is that they're kind of sick and tired. And I believe if there's going to be an annihilation of this country, we're going to have to either put up or shut up. They already want us dead. And we may have to fight to the death for our own sovereignty, for our own existence. And I think that that time at this point, unless it's, of course, something happens, you know, they can, you know, spare something before the election or during the election. Excuse me. If Obama wins the election, Israel's going to strike no matter what. That much I'm going to tell you, without a doubt.
Well,
but if Mitt
well
Romney
did you
wins,
see the movie 2016?
No, I
it gave
I,
the clue to it gave the clue to why Obama does not like Israel. Israel, in his eyes, is a colonial country.
Oh, of course, of course, of course. And the bottom line is that if Obama is reelected, Israel is going to strike no matter what. Right now, they are looking at zero hour. That's the bottom line for Israel. This is zero hour. They understand, and I don't want to use conspiracy theory for the be the precipice of what Israel is doing, but if there's anybody in the world who believes that Barack Obama is trying to unite the Arab world against Israel, Israel believes that. And I know that if they're looking at that election going, look, we don't know whether or not this guy's going to win or lose, but if he wins, that's it. And they're going to have to brace everybody in Israel and just going to go, look, folks, we are going to strike in order for us to survive. Many of you may die, but do you believe in the sovereignty of this country? And most Israelis are going to go, they're going to go, yes. And they're going to, we're going
if you look at the West Bank and take Israel without the West Bank, at its narrowest point, it's only 10 miles wide.
I know, but the, you know what? It's put up or shut up at this point because they've got a nation of people who are running around saying that we are going, come on, man, this guy Mahmoud Ahmadinejad was at the UN today saying that Israel will be eliminated while he is developing nuclear weapons.
Yep.
And why won't anyone take him at his word? Hitler lives.
If there's a fight, bet Israel is going to lose.
That's
even
fine.
If they nuke, they're going to lose.
I
they're going to lose badly. There may not be a country left when the Iranians get done with them.
No.
I don't think so.
They're going to lose, Mike. In no way am I disputing that they're going to lose. But you know what? You go down fighting. That's what
Israel will
is
not lose.
They're going to lose. They're not big enough to withstand the barrage of missiles
there are other,
launched at them.
There are other factions that
this
you're
is,
missing.
But no. Even if
and
that's the case,
although you're not going to want to know, it's a supernatural thing, and that's what the whole thing boils down to. It's always been supernatural. Muslims against the Jews. There's never going to be peace. It always has. Who's going to control Jerusalem? Jerusalem is the holy city for the three major religions that all worship the one God, and that will never be settled.
Israel knows at this particular point that they've got a United Nations that's been against them, and now, I mean, think about this: for Israel since 1948. From 1948 to believe that they had the support of the United States, a strong support of the United States, and then to be at this particular point of their lives as a country, right, their existence as a country, where they believe that the Arab uprising, the screaming and hollering of the destruction of their land, where now it's become so great, and the United States has pretty much sort of taken a lounge chair approach at all of this. And Israel is pretty much saying, here we are alone in this region, and we have got to decide on what it is that we're going to do to exist in this country or die trying. You've got to make a decision. And I believe, and this is, again, we're talking about the Middle East, which is a different region than anywhere else in the world. In this country, we have this thing about selfishness and self-preservation, you know, and we take, we have conflict resolution, and we try all of these different tactics to avoid that situation. But in these countries, it's put up or shut up. It's die, live or die. And I believe that
guys,
I gotta
bring up one thing. Are you all familiar with this whole Stuxnet issue with Israel?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. They have already played that card to say that they were committing cyber war directly against Iran. They have no choice. And my point, the final point I was making is, not only will they strike, they don't have traditional ordnance to take it out. I would not rule out low-yield nuclear. I'm terrified about what they are capable of doing because they're facing it. You've got the
how about EMP?
What's that?
An EMP, electromagnetic pulse. How about using that?
Well, I mean, you know, you could take an EMP and you might get it in there, and then what's the end result? For a short period of time, you take out most of the infrastructure, but you're not going to take out the bunkers that are feet below the concrete.
And then what do you do with the Strait of Hormuz? I mean, is America willing to see our economy totally collapse over this? Because it will.
They will bomb that will take the sites out in a way, because they can't get deep enough down where people can't go. They'll take it, they'll nuke, because it's the only way to take the nation and make it non-habitable.
Yeah, but see,
this is the fault of Barack Obama, and I lay it right at his feet.
When he became
president, he had a choice to support the dissidents in Iran, and he refused to do so. Instead, what does he do? He overthrows our friend in Egypt. Remember what Franklin Roosevelt said about one dictator in Central America? He might be a son of a bitch, but he's our son of a bitch.
Well, you know, it's funny that here's the thing that I'm talking about. What I believe that a lot of people are fearful of is that if Israel decides to attack Iran, that what they'll be doing is dragging the United States kicking and screaming into a war. That's what it is. I mean, I don't think anybody here can dispute that. Is that the United States is going to have to, because the rest of the world is going to say, where do you stand on this war? Where do you stand on this attack? With somebody like Barack Obama at the helm, you know what he's going to say. You know,
they're not going to move until the French do it.
I would rather not pay $12 a gallon for gasoline. You know,
hey, listen,
and that's your result. If no oil comes out of the Persian Gulf, get ready, man. It's going to get expensive.
I'm sure that it will, but guess what? There's going to be two things are going to happen in the result of that. If the Strait of Hormuz is closed and we get to $12 a gallon gas, two things have to happen. And that is, one, there will be a lot of anti-Semitism in this country by the left. It would be the biggest Jew-hating frickin' society that you've ever seen, especially in New York.
What do you think happens when rednecks can't drive their pickup trucks? You think they're just going to not say, these damn Jews did this? Of course they will.
No. I know that everyone's going to blame the Jews. The anti-Semitism is going to grow like wildfire. Secondly, which will be a good thing, that finally some of these morons will lay off this whole thing about drilling for oil on our own land.
Agreed.
They will definitely get off that.
Ideology always comes first.
When those environmentalists see how much they're paying for gas, even with a hybrid, someone's going to say, somebody get your ass up in the Yucatan. Somebody get up in the...
You don't think that ideology trumps common sense, no matter what?
Some
of these people would go down on the ship and say, well, you know, this is what we want. I mean, didn't Barack Obama give American taxpayer dollars to Brazil to develop their oil fields, and he vetoed ours?
Remember one thing. We've been in two major wars. This thing happened.
Someone's breaking up.
Go ahead, Sal.
No, I was just saying, we've been in two major wars recently that we didn't feel as citizens here. If this thing happens, we're going to get dragged in real quick, and you're going to feel it here. And that will be the difference where people will finally wake up and realize we can't rely on these nations for our energy.
Yeah, absolutely.
We haven't even mentioned what Russia and China would do.
Yeah, and again, second part of this, but again, I don't think that they want to go to war. They don't. I mean, I know they care about Iran, but I don't think they care about Iran, if you get my meaning.
Right,
right.
You know what I mean? That's our
show. For Christ's sake, China sure as hell don't give a shit about their own people. Did you see that poor man that they steamrolled today?
Oh, I didn't watch that video.
Oh.
We'll talk about that tomorrow.
But if they see
plenty
more tomorrow, when they will act.
Yeah. We'll see what's going to happen. Thank you, folks. As usual, Edward in Connecticut, Dennis the Menace, Sally in Massachusetts, and Wipe My Eye. We'll be back. We'll see you tomorrow. Don't forget to check out Marathon and log on to Marathon.com. William Owens, thank you for being a guest on our show. We'll see you tomorrow. It's Reese on the Radio.